Hello, my name is Jonathan Helmke. I am the University Archivist at the University of Dubuque. It is February the 26th, Thursday. It is 11:30 Central Time, 12:30 Eastern Standard Time. We're talking with Susan Bellinger. Susan, can you please spell say your name and spell your name, please?
Okay, it's Susan Bellinger, Susan, S-U-S-A-N. Bellinger, B-E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R.
Thank you, Susan. And what year did you graduate from the university?
In 1959. 1959,
okay. And what was your major?
Philosophy and sociology. I had a double major.
Okay. For that, too. Okay, the first couple questions here is kind of pre-UD in terms of kind of your family background a little bit. The first question is, what was your hometown that you came from?
New York City.
Excuse me?
New York City, Manhattan.
Ah, okay. And what schools did you attend to then?
I attended a public school, PS 113, for 2 years, and then I went to the Hunter College School, model school, which was a specialized school, and then I continued at Hunter College, junior high and Hunter College High School. So I went through I spent the first 2 years in public school, regular public school, and then the rest of it in the Hunter College complex.
Okay. And were those schools integrated, or was it...
The elementary school, there were two African-Americans. It was myself and Ronald Brown, who became a member of Clinton's cabinet. By junior high, there were probably about six African-Americans in the school, and in the high school, there were about 20 of us.
I'm sorry, Miss.
So it was integrated, but minimally.
Whose candidate did you say, Ronald Brown? I missed it.
Ronald Brown became a cabinet member in President Clinton's administration.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, so there were only the two of us in the school, in elementary school.
Wow. What a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a cabinet member, wasn't he?
Yes. He died in a plane crash.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you grew up in the Manhattan area. What part of Manhattan did you grow up
in? In Harlem.
In Harlem. Okay.
Yes.
And what did your father do, or your parents?
He was a mail clerk for the New York Central Railroad.
Okay. And your mother?
She did not work.
Okay. And did you have any siblings?
I had one brother... and then two half-siblings.
Okay. For that, too. And so, where are you currently living now?
I live in Manhattan in the Upper West Side.
Okay. We'll go back a little bit here. The second question is, what your journey to UD? How did you hear of UD? What got you at this place?
I grew up as a Presbyterian and in the Church of the Master, which was fairly famous in Harlem, James Robinson, who started Operation Crossroads Africa, and which was a forerunner for the American Peace Corps. Really was a mentor of mine, and he was the one that actually almost insisted that I go to University of Dubuque. I had scholarships to several colleges in New York, but it was a time when there was just the beginning of integration, and there was a feeling clearly that I would be able to maintain myself in a school because I had had the experience of being in all-white schools previously.
And James Robinson, do you know if he knew President Couchman? The name is familiar.
Probably did, but I can't vouch for that.
Okay.
Vouch for that.
And do you remember if Mr. Robinson came to speak at UD? His name is really, really familiar. I don't know if...
He was really relatively famous. As I said, he created Operations Crossroads Africa. He traveled all over the world. Even my church, which was a black church or African-American church, but we always had interns from Union Seminary who were white, so it was, in a sense, kind of an integrated church. And he did travel all around the country, but I can't say for sure. And certainly when I was there, he did not speak. But my guess would be that the Couchman did know him.
Right, right. Now, did you feel, were you excited about the chance to come to Dubuque, or did you feel like a sense of duty, or what were your, do you remember what your
attitude? I was ambivalent, to be honest. The thought of going to Iowa, which was... it was almost like going to a foreign country, just as far as I was concerned, because I had traveled, but I had traveled only in the Northeast, and I knew nothing about Iowa. But I also felt some excitement about going. It was as I said, ambivalence.
Right. And what was the experience like, the initial contact with Iowa, or the trip to Iowa?
That's an interesting question. I came because my father worked for the railroad. We could travel on the railroad free. My mother came with me and settled me, and I felt fairly comfortable from the time I got there.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But I will tell you, it was a continuation of the experience of seeing very few African Americans and being in touch with people who had never actually been around African Americans.
And were your first contact, was it any different when you arrived in Iowa than what you experienced in Manhattan in the high schools, or was there a noticeable change, less familiarity among the students who are here?
Less familiarity, but a comfort in asking questions and reaching out to me, I think.
Right.
Were there any other female African Americans when you came in 56?
Yes, one.
One.
Yes. Her name was Anne, and she was from Memphis, but I cannot remember her last name right now.
That's fine. I can look it up.
Yeah, and she was above me. I think she was a junior when I came.
So you were the only two African-American females then?
Yes, one had graduated the year before. Her name was Barbara. And let me think, two at least came after me.
Okay.
And you came in...
But I was the only African-American in my class, yes.
Even male?
Female. There were several
African
American
males. Okay. And Susan, you came in 1955, the fall of 1955?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And so you rode by train then to here. And how did your family feel about that, you coming to Iowa?
My father never was involved very much in the decision-making, and my mother was absolutely... my mother was very, very active in the Presbyterian Church,
mm-hmm.
and she was absolutely committed to me going.
Okay. So was there a program that that your pastor knew then, or he just knew the school, just in general?
He just knew the school, as far as I know. I mean... He may have known more. If you think about those times, children didn't, and our children or adolescents didn't make decisions. Parents made decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decision was made for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm sure my mother knew more about the school almost than I knew, but it was really a decision where she basically made the decision that that was where I was going. And it was a decision, as I said, made with the pastor.
And the decision was made before you had a chance to visit campus. When you came out here the first time was a time you were...
Absolutely.
...going to school.
Wow.
And did you come out by yourself, or were you joined...
No, with my mother.
With your mother. Okay.
So who met you when you got off the train?
Oh, I have no idea. I could not remember that far back. I think I didn't. Now, no one met us at the train. I think we were met at the campus.
Okay, who met you first at the campus? Do you remember that?
No, I don't. But I do remember there was someone who ran the choir. I can't remember who he was. Who was the first person that I really sat down and had an interview with? I cannot remember his name.
Okay, I'll find that out. Okay.
Does anything stick out from that first contact or that first interview?
Yes. I can remember humorously that a stereotype immediately emerged because I was automatically placed on the choir because I think they felt blacks could sing.
Okay.
And I am one of the few maybe in the world that can't sing a lick.
You broke stereotypes from day one.
Yep, and I had to inform them that they had made a mistake and that they would be sorry if I was on the choir.
Did they take you at your word, or did you have to prove it to them?
Oh, no. They took me at my word. I would not have ever gone to a choir rehearsal. I really cannot sing. but I do remember, just kind of smiling and saying, oh, and choir rehearsal is, et cetera, as, you know, they had just assumed that I would join the choir.
Right.
So what were your interests in terms of activities on campus that you participate in?
Well, I joined a sorority.
Okay.
I joined Zeta Phi.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I was involved in, you know, and this is really such a long time ago. I remember. We created a dance group, a small dance group, but that was the next year when another African-American student came on. I was asking about her. Her name was Tracy Batiste from Chicago. And we used to do Martin dance with a couple of other people. As I said, I joined the sorority. I actually established some good friendships, but I'm trying to think, I wasn't that engaged in that many other activities.
It was a model.
I did belong to the Honor Society, but we didn't really meet that much.
Yeah.
I remember hanging out a lot at what was the kind of the luncheonette, it was the name of
Peter's Commons.
Pardon?
Peter's Commons.
No, Peter's Commons, yes, I know, but there was a little, like a diner.
Oh, Goats.
Goats, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah, I hung out there a lot.
can I go on that tangent, maybe just a little bit here? With Goats, was it pretty well integrated, you think?
Well, not really, because there were not that many. I mean, yes, I felt comfortable there, so
yep.
That's the question, but there were not that many African Americans on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there were 12 of us.
Okay. So what's kind of your favorite, we'll start with academics, kind of your favorite faculty member or teacher that you remember?
Absolutely, John Knox-Coit.
Mm.
He was the reason that I actually changed my major, and I took every philosophy course that I could. And as I said, wound up with a double major. I had come out, had declared sociology as my major and actually did do a double major, as I said. But he was absolutely my favorite teacher and probably the only teacher whose name I remember. And one of the things that I remember was sitting in Goats sometimes fairly late just talking with him. He was incredibly sophisticated, incredibly knowledgeable and incredibly welcoming. So he not only was a teacher, I considered him a mentor.
Was that kind of a favorite hangout spot for him, or would he say, would you say, can we meet there, or how would you connect at that?
I think he was there, and it wound up after a while, we would just find him and sit and talk for, hours.
Huh.
So it was a hangout for him also.
Right.
Were there other African Americans that did philosophy, or was it other people did other majors?
Wow. No, I think I was the only one.
Okay.
Now, Tracy, who one year was my roommate while I was there, we hung out a lot together, and she also he was really a very, I would say, more sophisticated than a lot of the faculty. And so, could talk about theater and could talk about the arts, et cetera, and those are things that I was interested in. Mm. And Tracy was also interested in. She came from Chicago.
Okay.
And to some extent, the fact that we were city-based was made us different in some ways, not only because we were African-American, but because we were from large cities. We had a different perspective than a lot of the students who did come from small towns and from farms.
Yep.
So in some ways, Professor Coit seemed he was more, I don't know his history, if he was from a city or urban area, but he was more cosmopolitan and seemed to be
absolutely
more worldly.
And more accepting, just totally comfortable with us.
Right, right. Do you remember ever talking about what was going on in terms of civil rights? Was he someone that you would talk to about events that are happening in Little Rock or elsewhere in the country?
Well, we were there at the, it was just the inkling of the start of the civil rights, because I graduated in 59, and most of my experiences really with the interest of civil rights happened in graduate school, which was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked a little bit, but there wasn't as much of a recognition of what was going on. So in some levels, being in Dubuque from 55 to 59 was almost like being in a sheltered area.
Right.
Hmm.
Right, right.
There was not that much talk about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, it wasn't going on yet. I mean, it started, the real push for civil rights really started about the time I was leaving Dubuque.
Right, right. In the summer of 60 or so when you really started.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now, you said you felt very comfortable talking to Professor Coit. Were you uncomfortable? Were there other professors that it was clear that you were treated differently because you're African-American, or you're made to feel uncomfortable, do you have recollections of other professors?
I have a recollection of one professor who was, in fact, a sociology professor, and if I'm not mistaken, her name was Brenner. Brenner. Somehow that comes up. I hope that's right. I'm not sure, but and she was a sociology professor, and she and I, it never was overt, but I don't think she was comfortable with me. I can remember the first paper I got. There were comments that were not accepting because I had always been considered, extraordinarily bright. I had been in a special school, and we had kind of, I just never felt that she was comfortable with me, but she finally had to give me decent grades, but I always felt that did it begrudgingly.
Right, right.
Hmm.
She's the only person that I can remember that I felt was not comfortable with me.
Right. Do you remember, even if you don't remember the names, do you remember other professors who stick out that you interacted with and made an impact on your life at different departments or in sociology?
No.
And was John Knox Coit, did you maintain contact after school, or did you hear any more?
For a little while, and then I really, I think I maintained contact. We wrote to each other for a couple of years. In fact, he encouraged me, and my senior year, I applied to the New School for Social Research.
Oh, yeah.
and actually got a scholarship in philosophy.
Wow.
To study further, but I did not accept it.
Okay.
I could not afford to go to school after I went to graduate school, but 2 years after I worked for 2 years.
Right, right.
But I did stay in touch with him for, you know, 2 or 3 years. He's the only one I stayed in touch with.
Okay.
Okay. In terms of students, did you feel accepted by other students?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, did you feel accepted by other students?
Mostly. Some of them were fascinated with me, to be honest, but yes, I did feel accepted.
For the two. And so was the sorority that you belonged to, was that integrated?
Well, I integrated it.
Okay.
There were very few people that could have integrated it. There were, I think, 3 African American women on campus. Now, Zeta Phi did. Not only was I there, but there was a Indian young woman by the name of Madhu, who was from India. And she was also in Zeta Phi, so clearly we were the most integrated of the sororities.
Okay.
And when Tracy came, she also joined Zeta Phi. So I would tell you that there was such a thing as sort of multi-ethnic. That was the sorority that had the people of color.
Uh-huh.
Right. Where did you live when you came to UD? Were you in Severance Hall, or do you remember?
Severance Hall, yes.
Whole
time.
For all 4 years?
Okay. Yes. I don't think there was a choice. I think that was the only facility for women when I was there.
I'm sitting in Severance Hall at this moment as we speak. Do you remember what floor you were on?
I know the first year I was on the second floor.
Okay.
And I moved each year. But I don't remember.
Okay. On occasion, there have been women who have walked down the hallways and have pointed out the rooms that we are now in our offices and said, well, I used to live in this room, but that's where Tracy lives.
Right. So. I do remember being on the second floor my first year, and I can tell you the other thing that I was thinking about this when you told me, you know, that you were going to call. Most everybody had a roommate, and I did not have a roommate when I went there.
Okay.
And I think that was, you know, purposeful. I think that the school didn't know who would be comfortable with me. So of all the freshmen, I think I may have been the only one that did not have a roommate.
Did you have roommates in subsequent years?
No, I thought it was great not having a roommate. So I had a roommate 1 year, and that was Tracy. We decided to room together, though.
Okay.
What year was that? Was that your sophomore year or junior year?
I think it was my sophomore year, yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned Tracy, because Justina Archibald mentioned her, too. Another alumni.
Oh. Well, say the name again.
Justina Archibald.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, but she mentioned Tracy's name, too, so it's kind of interesting.
They may have overlapped.
She may have come after I left.
Yeah.
Because Tracy was younger than I was.
Yeah. Okay. In terms of going outside of UD, did you ever go into the community, Dubuque community?
Yes.
Okay, and how did you feel about that experiences?
Well, I can tell you a humorous story. I think the first week that I was there, I had to go into town to buy sheets or something for my room. I can't remember. And the bus driver asked me if I was the Indian, if I was the girl from India who was going to the school. And I thought he was being sarcastic or just, you know, being funny. And I realized that he actually did not know that I was African-American. I was stunned. Because he had found out that there was an Indian girl coming to the school. And as I said, it was Madhu Patel, who actually wore saris the whole time that she was there. But he actually, I really did think he was joking. And found out that he really didn't know the difference between someone who looked like an Indian and someone who looked like an African-American.
My my goodness.
Oh, my gosh.
Shows you
and clearly, when I was there, I don't think there was an African-American in Dubuque at all in the town, not one. So whenever I went, people, you know, when we went any place in town, clearly people knew who I was very easily because the town was much smaller than it is now.
Do you remember if there are African-American students or Indian students or any students of color at Clark or at Loras College during that time?
I don't think there was at all at that time. Because we would have known. I think that my senior year, there was someone at Clark. And we met, but we weren't able to connect. Times were very different, you know. We had to get permission to go off campus. You know, I was thinking about this. It was a very, very, very different era in terms of how one stayed in a college.
Right. Now, you mentioned that your mother in particular, I mean, what was kind of driving in her connections with the Presbyterian Church were she found it very important to have you go to the school and help the process of integration take place. Do you remember when you're here at campus there being events that would raise awareness about what was going on elsewhere, or do you remember President Couchman ever addressing, you know, integration or what was taking place around the country and the importance of integration, or was this something that was talked about, or was this more...
It was not talked about.
Not talked about, yeah.
Not at all. And I will tell you that there were several kinds of incidents where we were aware, and I say we because I'm talking about after my first year, where people were aware of some discomfort with, there were people who were fascinated with me because I was African-American, mm-hmm. Who clearly had never been anywhere near a person of color.
Right.
And I don't remember, in some levels, it was living in a bubble. There was very little talk of race.
Do you remember wanting to talk about that, or was that not even really not something you thought about?
Well, you know, to be honest, the African Americans who were on campus talked to each other. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of other people who were relatively sophisticated. I can remember a Canadian by the name of Ron Holtzman, who was very, very comfortable and hung out with the African-American students, and we would talk. But most of the talk was questions about, you know, people from farm towns, et cetera, who would ask us questions about being black.
Right.
Hmm.
I can tell you a kind of humorous story that has always stuck with me, and I cannot remember, but I was sitting on campus outside one day when a little girl sat down next to me and started talking with me. She must have been maybe six, and she asked me where I was from, and I said New York City, and she said, it must get very hot in New York City, and I looked at her and I said, what, you know, kind of like, where did that come from? And she said, because when I sit out in the sun, I get dark, and you're so much darker, it must be very hot.
You had a better tan than she had.
Huh?
You had a better tan than she had.
Yeah, but it was a lovely, she fell in love with me. I can't remember her name, but I wound up being a babysitter for her a couple of times. Just because whenever she saw me, I became one of her favorite people. But she had never seen a person, you know, a person of color before.
My goodness.
But it showed that she was open, at least, to experience. I mean, there was I really didn't run into prejudice. I ran into discomfort. And people would ask all kinds of questions of me because the majority of people, most of the people on campus had never been anywhere near an African-American.
Right.
And I also can tell you that I, on a couple of breaks, I went home with someone one Thanksgiving to South Dakota and made her a celebrity because everybody in the church wanted to meet me. you know, I had a couple of experiences like that of going into towns where clearly they had never seen an African-American in their lives. But mean, no one nearby was hostile. If there was hostility, I did not know about it.
Right, right. Where would you, you said sometimes African-American students would gather together and talk about whatever. Would Goats be a favorite a spot that you typically meet, or would you meet on campus, or where was
it? We met sometimes, sometimes the African-American females, as I said, there were not that many of us, would meet in one of the rooms, which is one of the reasons I liked having a single room. We did meet at Goats. We would meet sometimes after events and just hang out. So, there weren't that many of us, but we did meet. We really didn't meet as a group. Most of the African-American men were much older. If I remember, there were like three or four who were veterans, so they were much older.
Mm-hmm.
And then the others were, they're mainly, to be honest, I think they had sports scholarships.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So the men would have been at the Korean War in 55,
Yeah.
Does the name Roosevelt Harvey?
Sure, I remember that.
Okay, I was talking to Carl Willis.
Yes, I remember. He's the only I remember. Carl Willis, Ken Stubblefield.
Yep.
Ben Stubblefield. Ben's name I can't remember. And then there was a guy named Art. Ben and Art had the same last name, but they weren't related.
Okay.
And then there was a Willis. They called Willie. I can't remember his name. But, I mean, there were at least, as I said, probably about seven African-American men, but they, my sense of them was that they were much older. And then the second year that I was there, another person from my church came to Dubuque, David Travis.
Oh, David?
Yeah.
Travis?
Yeah.
Did he stay all 4 years? Did he complete the...
Yeah, he graduated the year before me. He didn't stay 4 years because he transferred there.
Okay.
So he transferred there, I think, as a sophomore, but he was a little older. And actually, I have stayed in touch with him.
Oh.
Okay. Afterwards, do you mind if I can get his contact information?
Absolutely.
That'll be great.
Have you stayed in contact with Tracy Baptist or Baptiste?
I stayed in touch with her for quite a while. She actually moved to New York and got married. Her last name was McNamara, but over the years we have totally lost touch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not in touch with anybody. The last time that I was in touch with people was at, I guess the 55th anniversary, the 50th anniversary, and I did talk with a couple of people, Joy Wilder, is that name, I think. I was in touch with two or three people during that time because I was actually thinking about coming back, but I was not able to take the time off at that time.
Have you been back since graduating? Have you been back to UD?
Yeah, I received the Distinguished Alumni Award.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And I came back for that.
Okay. So post-UD, before we kind of jump into that, do you think UD prepared you for your career that you eventually kind of went into your path?
Well, it helped. But, I went to graduate school. I went into social work.
Okay. So what was your career in terms of your post-UD career?
Okay, I went to Boston University and got a master's in social work. And I worked as a social worker for, about 5 years. Then I went to Columbia University School of Social Work, where I became an officer, and then created a company, and I became a social work organizational and management consultant. But most of my life, I have been a consultant to organizations, nonprofit organizations, and basically also worked, I became a vice president of the fund. I worked with a lot of foundations. So the jobs where I was not a consultant, where I was actually an employee, was basically I was a vice president of the fund for the city of New York, and I also was a director at Edna McConnell Clark Foundation.
Okay. So for, you know, those positions, do you think UD gave you a foundation?
I think it helped. I wouldn't say that, you know, as I said, when I left UD, my expectation was that I was going to go and major in philosophy and become a philosophy teacher. And as somebody told me, there was not that much of a market for that. It's interesting, I look back, and when I graduated from high school, I had identified that I was going into social work. On some levels, at University of Dubuque, I went a little bit away from that and really thought about teaching philosophy because I really did love that field, but then came back to my original thought about a profession. And as I said, went to Boston University, which obviously prepared me more so that I think UD had a role to play, but clearly BU was the place that prepared me more for my profession.
Right. Are you still consulting in social work? Is that still your...
Oh, no, I retired. I'm 77.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure when you were born, but I was guessing you're roughly my parents' generation, and my father still does some consulting, so I didn't want to make assumptions.
Yeah, no, I had consulted well past 65, but no, I retired. I still was on a couple of boards, but I retired from my last board about 6 months ago.
Okay. Going back, I'm just interested. You were talking about this dance group you're a part of, and you're talking about these conversations with John Knox Coit, and you said theater and film and drama and things kind of culture related. Did you find that you were able to, I mean, coming from New York, kind of the cultural mecca of the planet, to sleepy Dubuque, were you culturally starved, or did you find ways to...
I was culturally starved. I considered it a wasteland. That's the honest reaction. There was very little to do in Dubuque. And certainly in terms of arts and culture, almost nothing.
Right.
So did you ever go to, like, Chicago to do...
Absolutely. Whenever, you know... Whenever I, you know, for instance, for any holiday, if I didn't go home, that was how Tracy and I became so close, because she came from Chicago. So we would go even for long weekends when we could get permission. And whenever I didn't go home for holidays, I went to Chicago.
You take the train there?
Yeah. Yes.
Where did she live in the city? Do you remember? Where would you go to when you were in Chicago?
Oh, we went to the theater, we went to movies, we always went to church because she was Presbyterian also. Her parents were middle class, I would say even upper middle class, much wealthier than my parents were, and so she lived in a very nice house, I can remember. And we would go to parties, we always wound up going to church because she was Presbyterian also. But her family was very welcoming and very supportive of me. So I became almost like an adopted daughter once she came.
Right. Someone was just trying to enter my office. And I'm sorry for the distraction.
Yeah, but there was very little on campus of social, you know, artistic or cultural event. It truly was kind of a wasteland. I can remember rarely even going to the movies, and I'm not sure why.
Right. So you weren't a singer. Would they have films on campus, or would they have musical events, or were there attempts at least made to entertain or keep things fresh and interesting, and that didn't leave an impression on you?
Well, you know, I'm interested because I've gotten some communications from the school in the last years with the new cultural center, et cetera, none of that was there.
Right.
I don't think I went. There weren't even movies. I'm trying to remember, and I can tell you that there were very few cultural events, you know, other than the dances
mm-hmm.
and the proms and things like that. But there weren't, I can't remember any cultural event that really stands out. I do know there were a couple of speakers that came from other places, but nothing that I can, you know, identify that made an impression on me. I will tell you, I really did feel that Dubuque was a wasteland in terms of culture, particularly for someone coming from New York.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And with your dance group, were you able to perform, or did you perform, or were you, was that
we
fairly?
We did perform, and I can't remember where, but I mean, it wasn't that big a dance group, and I laugh about it because people thought we were so great, and I think we were terrible, but I can remember creating, you know, doing choreography, and I would have thought, if I had been in New York, I would have been thrown off the stage, but and I think we weren't that good, but we, but we were interesting to people. I think, you know, people thought we were good, but we weren't.
Right. And was it a record player that you were, like an album that you were dancing
absolutely.
To?
Absolutely. We would dance to records, yes. We created modern dance. You know, I can remember with the we're having the black leotards, and, you know, that's so funny that I hadn't thought about this in so long. We did something on drug abuse one time, and I don't think any of us knew anything about drug abuse, but some of we had read this thing. Part of it comes through, and I actually have a picture of myself and Tracy in leotards.
Uh-huh.
Dancing. I can't even remember where we were dancing, but it was somewhere on campus.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
That's really neat. Do you remember what the music was that you'd play? Was this classical or jazz or what was
it? No, it was jazz. It was modern dance.
Modern dance. So you'd have a Charlie Parker piece playing or
something like that. Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Did you continue to dance after college, or was that more a
not really.
Not really.
I don't know where and how that came through. I can remember having on a black leotard and the black tights and a headband, and I was the choreographer, so I made up all these different dances, and it was about five of us. But I just have a memory, and I don't even know where we were, but we were on stage, and we were dancing to some jazz, and it was, I think it was about a drug addict or something. We didn't even know what drug addicts were, but I think it was called Pusher Man or something like that. it's just dim memories, but it just comes through. And I actually was trying to find some of the, I still have some photographs, and I was trying to find them, but I could clearly remember one of the photographs of us in leotards, and we were on a stage. I can't remember where it was.
That would be wonderful. I don't know if John explained that we're putting together not only an exhibition but an exhibition catalog, and if you're willing and interested to share, if you can place your hands on the photo, that sounds like that might be the kind of photo, you know, that would be wonderful to include in the catalog if you can find
them. Okay, I'll definitely look for them because I've been sending people photographs because I'm kind of clearing out my apartment, and I do also remember a couple of photographs of the Zeta, you know, of Zeta Phi. We went to Wisconsin Dells one time.
Okay.
And one of the initiations, I have pictures of. So I'd be happy to send those too, because they're not things that I really am going to keep at this point. So I'd be happy to do that.
Well, then,
I just have to find them.
Right. Well, that'd be fantastic. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Susan, I'll give you my address.
Okay.
Can I email you an address, or do you...
Absolutely.
Okay.
My email is Sue, S-U-E, 6091 at hotmail.com.
That'd be great. I will email you my address.
Okay.
And if you find them, that'd be great.
I know I have them here. In fact, I was trying to find them just to jog some memories, but I don't know where they are right now, but I will look for them.
That'd be great. Because that's the part we're missing in our archives is student pictures.
Okay.
We have a lot of yearbook pictures and all that, but nothing really coming from the student.
Because the other thing is that I realized I had forgotten this. I also ran for queen. There was some queen of campus or something like that. The homecoming queen.
Yeah.
Homecoming queen, and I do have a picture of that.
Oh, wow.
With about 10 other girls.
Was that your senior year?
That was my senior year.
Okay.
And I also was elected into the Honor Society on campus.
So you have a picture of your homecoming queen then?
I have a picture it's actually in a newspaper that I still have somewhere, so I'm going to find it.
Okay.
I think I have a photo and I have the newspaper. And I know I have a photo when I was elected into the Honor Society. There was someone by the name of Chris, I can't remember his last name, who was a valedictorian, I think, of the class.
Oh, a 59.
Pardon?
A 59?
Yes.
Okay.
And we actually wound up being, I think I was the top female student when I graduated.
Wow.
Mm.
And I was thinking about this, I had totally forgotten, I also was elected to Who's Who in American Colleges while I was there.
So you're pretty well academic, yeah.
So you were a very serious student.
Well, you know what? That's interesting. I don't know if I was a serious student. I don't see myself as having been a serious student. I went to a rigorous high school, and to be very honest, I found being in Dubuque not as challenging as my high school. Mm. I went to a high school that I had to take a test to go to.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And it's still considered one of the specialized schools, and you had to have a certain IQ even to take the test.
Right.
So I was considered, a top student even in New York.
Right.
So, and to be very honest, in Dubuque, no, I came out with very high grades.
Right, right.
So
how would you, I mean, this is a very open-ended question, but do you think you made the right choice, and did you enjoy your UD experience? Do you think it was the place that was right for you at that time?
That's an interesting question. I was comfortable there. I think I enjoyed the experience in hindsight, but I will tell you, at the end of my first year, I had received a scholarship I could have gone to any New York State school because I had taken a test and received a scholarship to any New York State school. I also received a scholarship to Howard.
Wow.
And I actually, after my first year, wanted to transfer. And again, my mother just said no.
Right, right. And
to be very honest, it was kind of wearying to be in Dubuque. People were obviously friendly, supportive, but I was really one of those people that I was almost like an alien. People asked all kinds of questions that I considered dumb at the time I can remember. But it was not out of hostility. It was out of really just not having ever been around a person of color.
Right, right.
And that sometimes was wearying.
Right.
Yeah.
So after the first year, I really did want to transfer. I was not able to do it. And after that, I really became, I knew I was going to be there, and I joined everything, and I had a good experience. I would say that, it was not a negative experience in any way to me.
Right, right. And were you, I know you said you had three siblings. Where were you in the pecking order?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. And did your siblings go on to college?
Yes. My oldest sibling graduated. My second, of the four of us, three of us were college graduates.
Okay.
Okay.
And did they go to other schools outside of New York, or did they have a similar experience to you, or were you the...
Yep, they all went. My oldest brother is my, as I said, my half-brother graduated from South Carolina State, which was a African-American school, black college, one of the historically black colleges. He was much older than I was. My sister did not graduate, and then my brother went to Lafayette, which is also a Presbyterian college in eastern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And again, he went there for the same reason, for the same, that minister who really was connected to all the colleges and sent almost everyone who went to the Church of the Master, which was the church I went to, wound up going to colleges, and most of them went to Presbyterian colleges.
What was the pastor's name again?
James Robinson.
James Robinson.
I have a really difficult question that I'm not expecting you to know the answer to, but I'm just curious. Your friend Tracy Baptiste, and she was in, when you travel back to Chicago and you'd go to church with her, do you remember if it happened to be Grace Presbyterian, or do you remember
that? I would not remember.
Yeah,
that.
I know that's,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, that I truly can't remember.
Right. Okay.
And so, in terms of Tracy, you haven't been in contact with her, right? I mean.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a good 20 or more years since I've been in touch with her.
Okay.
In the 60s, 70s, and probably into the 80s, I was in touch. And as I said, she I know she got married. Her last name was McNamara. When she was in New York, we stayed in touch. We saw each other. But after, I think she left New York, and I just don't know where she, went.
And have you maintained, did you follow up on your philosophy, kind of passion that was initiated in college? Did you ever take classes that related to philosophy after college, or
No, as I said, I came home and I was actually, in a sense, more of the same. I wound up being... There was a special program in New York City run to test whether college graduates could provide social work services. And once more, I was the only African-American chosen, but I was placed at an agency on foster care. And that agency then sent me to graduate school. I worked there for 2 years, and then they supported me when I went to graduate school, and I moved into social work, and I never went back to philosophy.
Right, right.
Okay. But, I had a double major, so I majored in sociology at Dubuque also.
Right, right. Yep.
What to kind of follow up on terms of kind of the programs that you were involved in, what kind of efforts were they doing, these foundations or nonprofits? What was kind of your main passion?
Basically, when I worked for the Fund for the City of New York, that is a foundation that helped social agencies, social service agencies, perform better. So that I would be helping them, helping managers with budgets, with fundraising,
okay.
With operations, with personnel.
Mm-hmm.
The last job that I had, where I was the director of the foundation, which was the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation, it was to help neighborhoods in New York City be more self-determined, take responsibility for their adolescence. I didn't actually do the work, but I funded, and you know, I was giving million-dollar grants to people who were trying to improve their neighborhoods, mainly in Harlem in the South Bronx, which were poverty stricken.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have questions about from us or about the project?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Have you been able to be in touch with? You know, the other thing I was going to tell you, and the one thing I'll answer your question, but very interestingly, maybe 10? It's more than 10 years ago. I also received an honor from Boston University. That's where I got my master's. And I was honored as an alumni of distinction there. And an amazing coincidence, one of the people on, I can't remember what the committee was, but I walked in and I was honored, and one of the people who was there was a young man by the name of William Walker, and he graduated from University of Dubuque.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
He became a dentist, and he was on the alumni committee. I had not seen him or heard his name in 30 years, and he came because he saw my name, because my name is relatively unusual.
Right.
And we connected, and that was in the 90s.
And he
became a dentist, as I said.
Right, and he graduated around 1959 as well. He was here.
He graduated before me because he graduated probably 57.
Okay.
But I mean, so you've got someone who he became very successful, and he was very active at the Boston University. He was on the alumni committee and a couple of other major committees there.
Actually, his name's on my list. I left him.
Yeah, well, I have a picture of him. when I was honored. There's a picture of the two of us someone took. I mean, he walked up to me, and I actually remembered him. And he was older. I think he may have graduated the first year I was there. So I met him, but we never became totally friends because I think he was a senior when I came in.
Right.
Yeah, but, on the sheet here, it says he graduated in 58.
Yeah, so he was there. That's interesting. I thought... and he was older also, but I thought he graduated earlier than that because I graduated in 59. But, I mean, I do remember him, and we sat and talked for a very long time. He was also from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And yep. As I said, he now lives in Boston, and he might still be around. We again stayed in touch for a while, but then lost track.
Yeah.
That is a picture. I have a really wonderful picture of the two of us at Boston University.
Nice.
That'd be great, too, because I left a message with him, but I haven't tried I haven't tried a cell phone yet, so I need to try that next. But, he's on my list of people here. So, well, I'll make that connection. That's great, because the more connections I make, the people, you know...
The richer the story will
be. Richer the story.
Uh-huh.
Because all these interconnections... that we have. Do you have the phone number? Do you mind emailing me the number of David Travis when you have a chance?
I'm trying to think where I have it.
But you can email me later on.
We have
right.
Your address now, so we can email questions directly to you, Susan, and then, yeah.
Then you can just email me the number for David Travis.
Okay.
That'd be great for that, too.
So any questions do you have about the project, or would you like to know more about
I would like to know, first of all, I'm curious, are there significantly more African-American students on campus now?
than the 50s. Oh, definitely. I mean, the school, I think our undergraduate enrollment is about 1,800 or 2,000. And I would, John, would you guess there's at least a couple hundred African American students on campus?
Okay.
I would guess it's maybe 10%.
Maybe 10%.
Of the student population. So a pretty, especially for Dubuque or anywhere in Iowa, you know, a fairly sizable representation. And it's a pretty, I believe the campus overall, we have about 25% students of color. So,
okay.
It's probably one of the most or diverse schools in the state, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. So yes. You actually have some, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and this project, in terms of, is it going to be a display? I'm not sure what the project is.
A few years ago, I was working on a research on a gentleman named Saul Butler, who I don't know if that name rings a bell or not. But
no, I don't know anything about
him. He was the first African-American student. He and his brother were the first African-American students at UD in 1915. And Saul Butler was a world-class athlete who went on and competed in the Olympics and should have won the Olympics in 1920, but he pulled a muscle prior to the games, and so he was impaired. Mm-hmm. But he had an amazing career and played one of the very few African-Americans playing professional football in the 20s and played basketball and formed an all-women's basketball team and was an editor for the Chicago Defender and for the Chicago Bee and had this kind of amazing life and was in movies and whatnot. And so it was. I was given a gift by this gentleman whose father played football with Paul Robeson, and so started looking at some of the connections between Paul Robeson and Saul Butler, and realized they entered school at the same time in 1915, and later realized that they had met each other and known each other. And so we mounted an exhibition that focused on the connection between those two gentlemen, and we realized that Saul Butler was indeed the first African-American student. And so we thought, wouldn't it be great to have an exhibition in 2015 that celebrates 100 years of African-American history at UD? And so this past summer, for a while we've been researching it, and this past summer a student was on fellowship and was researching the first 50 years and looking for how many African-American students came to UD and what was available in the archives. And John and I just met earlier today with a student who we're hoping will get the same fellowship for this upcoming summer, and we'll be able to continue the project. And John and I have co-taught this last semester. We co-taught an oral history class, and the focus was on developing the student skills so they could interview alumni, African-American alumni. And so we took a trip to Chicago. Well, before the trip, we had them conduct phone interviews with alumni from the 1960s. And then we took a trip after that where we met with alumni from the 70s and 80s. And it was really a neat experience. We had, especially when we came together
really
in a room, and they each had individual interviews, and then we had a group interview with these alumni who knew each other from the 80s and just had a really wonderful time. And so we're keeping it going and trying to, you know, John's been reaching out to, especially now, because I'm working on a book on Saul Butler, and John's pushing ahead on making contacts with alumni to try to keep this going. And so we're going to have an exhibition that is in the Heritage Center, the new Performing Arts Building you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And we'll also have a part of the exhibition will be in the library, and then we're hoping to have little satellite kind of mini installations around the campus that celebrate the history and in the fall. And we're also planning to have a sizable catalog that will, a good part of it will be simply transcribing the interviews, like the one we're conducting with you right now, and incorporating that so that, you know, the African Americans who've been here through the years kind of telling their own story about their experience at UD, and then these two students who've been, we're hoping the second student will get the fellowship, they're writing some pieces, and I'll write a piece that kind of frames the overall exhibition, and John will write a piece, so it's been, there's many facets to it, but, you know, ultimately it will be this large exhibition and a catalog, and it's what we're working toward.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, because a lot of time, I'm the university archivist, so in our collection we're missing a lot of stories. You know, those personal stories. We have a lot of, you know, administrative papers and all that kind of thing, you know, but nothing really that really tells a story.
From the student's perspective.
From a student perspective. And that's one of the key things that Joel Samuels, who was the former archivist, he wrote a book with another former alumnus about, it's called Child of the Church. So it's a history of the university. But we were noticing in the book, they didn't really touch upon the race issue very much. So that's kind of the gap that we're looking
now,
for.
And have you been able to be in touch with the many African-Americans who went through the school in the 50s?
Yeah, I got one, two, three, four, five. I got six names here.
Can you tell me the names? I'm just curious.
Yeah, first one was Dudley Millen. Millen?
I knew who that was, but yeah.
Yeah, he said no. He was nothing really. But there was another person that actually Carl Willis mentioned.
Oh, sure. I remember Carl.
Yep. They he mentioned Samson Rice. Samson Rice.
That's the other one. Right. That's right. There was a Ben Rice and a Samson Rice.
Oh, they were brothers.
No, I don't think they were brothers. They just had the same name.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And Ben Rice was a veteran.
He was a vet. Okay. He went to UD, too, at the same time, or?
Yeah, he was there this, when I was there, but they were older than I, and they were upperclassmen.
Yeah.
So they weren't there the whole time that I was there.
Yeah.
And there was an Art Rice.
Oh, an Art Rice, okay.
Three people with the name Rice, wow.
Huh. Yeah, then I have a David Travis.
That's the one I told you that I'm going to give you
the phone number. Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
And then
he came from my church.
Okay. Oh, he goes to your church. Okay. So he's the one that came from New York, too.
Yes.
From the church. And then a William Walker that you mentioned.
Right.
And then you, yourself, and then Carl Willis.
So Tracy wasn't on that list?
No, she might be. Let me double check. Yeah, this list came from our advancement office.
Okay, her name was B-A-T-T-E-A-S-T. And her first name was Tracelinor, T-R-A-C-E-L-E-A-N-O-R.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try to track her down because you're the second person that's mentioned her.
Okay, and there was, as I said, an African-American woman who graduated who was from Memphis, Tennessee, whose name was Ann, and I cannot remember her last name. I'm going to go look it up. Because I went home with her one spring break also.
There's one more name that we... There's Reverend Dinwiddie. I forget his first name right now.
Al Dinwiddie.
Al Dinwiddie.
He was from Chicago also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who I've actually spoken with him, and we tried to connect with him when we were in Chicago, and it didn't work out.
He's a minister?
Right, yep.
Oh, that... I did not know that. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we've had a couple phone calls.
Yeah, because Tracy and Al I actually saw Al, because I stayed in touch with Tracy and went to visit her, several times after college. And one of those times, we connected with Al. But Tracy was the one person that came out that I stayed in touch with for a very long time. And as I said, there was... Anne, I just cannot remember Anne's last name. I'm going to try and look it up, who was from Memphis, Tennessee, and she was an upperclassman, so she wasn't there the whole time.
Yeah.
Was she started in 53, or?
I got there in 55. I think she started in 53, yeah.
Okay.
And there was another woman by the name of Barbara who graduated in 55. I cannot remember her last name. I'm going to try and find my yearbook. And if I do, I can, I will find the names.
Yeah, I can look, too, because I've been looking through those, too, and just identifying people. And so.
But, if I, in summary, I would tell you that there were some incidents where I was not comfortable. Clearly, when I went downtown, there were times when, I was looked at because, I was probably the only African-American in the town at the time that I would go in. But I would say to you that the experience was almost totally a positive one, even though, I probably was more prepared to handle some of the racial incidents because I had gone to an all-white school even here.
Right, right.
So it was not, you know, for some of the students, the few African-American students, it was a different experience because they had never been in an all-white atmosphere, but I had been.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You know, but the other way, there was also someone came after me. My last year, I roomed with an African-American girl, and I cannot remember her name at all, which I find interesting. I can't, and I don't think she stayed. So I think she was only there for maybe a semester.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I will try my best to find, you're going to send me an address when you send the email?
Yeah.
I will send you, as I said, some pictures that I do have, because I had been looking at them, that's so funny, maybe about a year ago. And I know I still have them. I just have to put my hands on them.
That'd be great, Susan, because that's what we're kind of, we really want to personalize the exhibit and make it real.
Okay, good.
And that's why the Soul Butler, I think, was successful, because we told a story, not just a bunch
right.
of facts, but
right.
there was a person right. behind it, two people behind it,
mm-hmm.
That tell a compelling story. And through all these oral interviews, we are getting those compelling stories, including yours. And so thank you.
I appreciate it. Well, it's bringing back memories. It's been a very long time, but it may well be that once, I get your email address, that I'll come up with some other incidents and may send you some, information.
That'll be great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed meeting you.
Well,
it'd be nice to meet you in person at some point.
Well, and but who knows? Maybe I'll even come out. It's very interesting because my best friend out of graduate school wound up being an African-American woman who lives in Chicago and happened to be Presbyterian and also came from South Carolina, where my parents came from, and we have stayed in touch. And so I'm in Chicago a lot.
Right.
So it may well be that the next time I go, we'll decide and come out to Iowa. Who knows?
That would be fantastic.
That'd be great.
Make it work. And we'll keep you posted on the exhibition and when those dates will be. Generally, it's going to be October and November of this year. So
okay,
if you're yeah, in contact with her, you might keep that in the back of your mind. So
absolutely, I will think about that.
And actually,
okay.
it'll be during the homecoming week too.
Uh-huh. I might try to get out there because it's interesting to me that you're doing this. I think it's a great idea, and I would love to see it. So maybe I will try to make some arrangements to come out.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, thank you. It's interesting to have all these memories come back.
Okay. Have a great day.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.